U.S. versus McDonald.
May it please the court, I appear on behalf of Dwayne McDonald, who was away serving a 31-month term of imprisonment based in some substantial part upon the district court's erroneous conclusion and categorization of Mr. McDonald's prior Wisconsin convictions for first-degree reckless injury and second-degree sexual assault of a child as crimes of violence as that term is defined by Section 4B1.2 of the United States Sentencing Guidelines. With respect to the first-degree reckless injury, my argument is largely what Mr. Jones' argument on behalf of the prior appellant was. The inquiry begins, and I suggest ends, with this court's September 2008 decision in United States versus Smith, in which this court said, we must conclude that after Begay, the residual clause should be interpreted to encompass only purposeful crimes. Therefore, those crimes with a mens rea of negligence or recklessness do not trigger the enhanced penalties. Accordingly, we agree with the Second Circuit that crimes requiring only a mens rea of recklessness cannot be considered violent felonies under the residual clause of the ACCA. On Mr. McDonald's behalf, I urge this court, for not only Mr. McDonald's sake, but for the sake of a clear rule of law, to adopt that holding as a per se rule that reckless conduct is not the aggressive, violent, and purposeful conduct contemplated by Begay. In this regard, it does not matter whether the reckless conduct occurred in Indiana, in Wisconsin, in Hawaii, or in Georgia. Courts, district courts, and circuit courts throughout the Seventh Circuit will have a clear rule of law to adhere to, and it may minimize what I think Your Honor referred to as the parade of Begay cases that are coming through this court, not just on a weekly basis, but as we know today, a daily basis with three before the court today.
Actually, it's four, but that's all right. Now, is it your position that the second-degree sexual assault offense is something we should regard as a strict liability offense, as was the DUI in Begay?
Even more so, Your Honor. Wisconsin's crime of second-degree sexual assault of a child constitutes the epitome of a strict liability offense. What it says is that if a person of any age or either gender has either sexual contact or sexual intercourse with someone beneath the age of 16, they are guilty of the crime.
There is a purpose element to that crime, though. Under Wisconsin law, it has to be for the purpose of sexual gratification.
Correct, Your Honor. But no matter what the offender knows, has been told, reasonably believes and perceives, if the person engages in the actus reus, the person is guilty no matter what their mental state, their knowledge, and their intent
was. Only with respect to the victim's age. The defendant has to know what he's doing.
Oh, absolutely.
And to do it with the statutory purpose.
Exactly. In other words, an accidental incident of sexual contact or sexual intercourse, if that's even possible, does not violate the statute. But the bottom line is that it's the epitome of a strict liability offense, because if the offender, whether it's Mr. McDonald or a hypothetical offender, has every reason to believe that his sexual partner is of age. For instance, the sexual partner may have provided a fake driver's license showing the age to be 21, and the offender blazes forward with his desire for sexual gratification. That person is guilty under Wisconsin law. It's the epitome of a strict liability offense. It lacks the intentional, violent, aggressive, and purposeful aspects of conduct that Begay requires. I want to stress that this issue has proven complicated to this court prior to Begay. The en banc court only went so far as to say that sexual intercourse with a 13-year-old is a crime of violence. They specifically left unreserved an instance of sexual contact or intercourse with an older nominal victim, such that this panel, if it rules in Mr. McDonald's favor on this issue, is not overruling an en banc opinion.
Well, statutory rape victims are not nominal victims.
I'm sorry if I overstated or described it as insensitive. No way am I trying to minimize the magnitude of this conduct and this offense.
There is some concern. I have some concern about Shannon in that what we were struggling with as the in-bank court is the notion that there is surely some age, and we said below 14 was that age, but you know, you could quibble with it. Maybe you'd say below 10. I mean, there is some age at which any kind of sexual contact is inherently violent. And these statutory rapes provisions that every state has reflect that by categorically forbidding something which for adults isn't even a crime. You know, two consenting adults can have sexual relations with one another, and as long as there's no violence or other issues involved, we typically in today's world don't criminalize that. So I guess I'm wondering, the government has argued, which certainly Shannon invites, you know, what's so different between a 15-year-old and a 14-year-old? What's so different between a 16-year-old and a 15-year-old? You know, would we be coming into some conflict with Shannon? Are you asking this court to say that Begay from the Supreme Court, which it certainly is entitled to do, has required a qualification of our in-bank holding in Shannon?
Your Honor, the government's brief in this case does an outstanding job of pointing out that for purposes of the relevant type of injury discussed by Judge Posner's majority opinion in Shannon, a girl like the one in Mr. McDonald's prior offense of 14 years, 10 months is no differently situated in terms of that type of harm from the 13-year-old in Shannon. If Begay had not occurred, the government's brief stakes out a strong case for expanding Shannon. But in Shannon, Judge Posner, writing for the majority, specifically pleaded to the Sentencing Commission to give us greater clarity as to what is the analytical framework we're to employ. While the Sentencing Commission proved not ready to accept that task, I submit that the Supreme Court in Begay, by for the first time defining a specific analytical framework, has answered Judge Posner's request.
Well, by having both a type of risk requirement, which you would concede, I think, is about the same for 14-year-old 10-month, but also an intent requirement for physicalness.
Correct. Placing strict liability offenses beyond the framework and including within the framework only those forms of conduct that are purposeful, aggressive, and violent. And certainly Wisconsin's second-degree sexual assault of a child statute carves out a broad canvas that includes considerable conduct that is not necessarily violent, not necessarily aggressive, and not necessarily purposeful. It is a strict liability offense. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Cantor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Paul Cantor on behalf of the United States of America. I unfortunately can't tell you this morning that the endless parade of Begay cases is going to end. I quite frankly think it is going to continue. I agree with my colleague from the Western District who spoke in the case before this that the United States strongly believes that these cases need to be taken on a case-by-case basis, and to have a blanket application simply will not work. Let me try to explain as succinctly as I can why I believe that to be true. There is a request on behalf of the defense, on behalf of no doubt many defendants, to have a blanket application with regard to reckless offenses. I submit that that is simply impossible, Your Honors, and I'll tell you why. And with all due respect, I think that the Smith case was incorrectly decided. There are four stated offenses which are listed in subsection 2 or in the second provision. Extortion, burglary, arson, and felonies which involve the use of explosives. That is specifically what the statute says, or in the context of the United States sentencing guidelines, what the guidelines have adopted. Felonies which involve the use of explosives. There's no requirement of intent with regard to that specific crime. In fact, it necessarily implies recklessness.
But don't we have to go back to Begay, which at a minimum says that strict liability type offenses, that's the holding of Begay. So the court has read that list in the Armed Career Criminal Act, which, as you say, is picked up then in 4B1.2, as not including strict liability offenses. And I mean, I don't know. I'm wondering whether the court will throw more light on this when it issues its decision in chambers. It may or it may not, you know, but it certainly has another Begay-like case in front of it.
I understand. And I agree with the court that it that Begay, the Supreme Court, excluded certain strict liability offenses. I do not believe that the court excluded all strict liability offenses. And I say that for this very important reason. The Begay decision needs to be read, I submit, within the context of what the court was deciding. And the context of what the court was deciding were recidivist or enhanced penalties. No matter which one they're talking about, you necessarily have to have a minimum, the defendant standing before the bench has to have a minimum of two felony convictions.
Well, isn't that here what we have? I mean, nothing that we're talking about tells Wisconsin in this particular instance how severely it should punish second-degree sexual assault. If Wisconsin wants to have a very long term of years for that, it can punish that behavior however it wants to. We are asking a different question, which the court was too in Begay. How are we going to take that prior behavior and use it to enhance a later sentence? This is felon in possession of a gun. This has nothing to do with sexual contact with anyone. But do you have the qualifying prior convictions? And I have to say, I was quite surprised when Begay came out, because it seemed to me, just as a citizen, you know, that when you have a bad drunk driving record like that and you get into a car, it's awfully likely, it's way too likely for my taste, that you're going to hurt somebody. But the court said, no, that's not an enhancer.
And again, I think you're going exactly where I was going a moment ago, Judge, and that is this. The blanket application of Begay reads out what I think is quite frankly, the critical part of the Begay decision. And it's critical because of that recidivist sentencing context that it's made in. The gist of Begay, I submit, was to identify a defendant's prior offenses, which will shed light and give indication as to whether or not that defendant is going to commit yet another violent felony offense.
Actually, that's not the rule of law that comes from Begay, though. That's an explanation of the court's rationale or understanding of the reason or purpose of the statute, the Armed Career Criminal Act. It doesn't give us a rule of law to apply. And that seems to me what you're arguing we should read it as.
I appreciate what you said, Judge. I respectfully disagree. I've read your decisions of this court interpreting Begay, and every one of them, to the best of my recollection, mentions the fact of that indication of future violent activity. It's integral to Begay's decision. And that's why the severe recklessness presented by drunk driving doesn't apply. Because drunk driving gives no indication. There is no basis to conclude that a defendant with 100 drunk driving offenses is going to use a gun.
I don't see where that comes from other than very subjectively. And I have the concern I think Judge Sykes is alluding to. We need a rule of law. We can't just sit around and get some touch and feel of every statute and say, if you violated this statute in the past, you're more likely to be violent in the future. And I would say drug crimes are a terrible candidate for that, actually, if you're some street-level drug dealer. But
frankly, people who commit sex offenses against children typically don't carry guns or use guns, and they're not typically likely to in the future. They've got a different sort of a criminal pathology. So this undercuts your argument.
Well, the problem lies in the sentencing guidelines.
I'm sorry?
The sentencing guidelines is where the problem lies in this issue. If the commission had been clear, and as Judge Posner suggested, we wouldn't have had the Begay decision.
I think that's fair to say, Judge. Certainly, if they had taken the invitation of the court and clarified the law, certainly none of us would be here today.
Do you think there's any difference between the Armed Career Criminal Act and the guidelines 4B1.2, which? I mean, this court has said, no, we're going to read
exactly
it the same way because the language, but I mean, the government's disagreeing with Smith, so I thought maybe you might disagree with that too.
No, I do not. Right. But I do believe that Begay, I don't know how else to read it, quite frankly, Judge. It goes toward that indication because it's a sentencing. These are sentencing factors. And the gist of the decision went toward whether or not the defendant being sentenced was likely to commit future violent crimes. And therefore, the court was directed to look at the prior crimes and determine whether or not they made sense. A simple reliance, as Prebegay, on recklessness included virtually an innumerable number of cases that had no reflection whatsoever on whether or not a defendant was going to commit future violent offenses.
Well, that decision flowed from Begay's requirement of purposeful, violent, and aggressive conduct in the conjunctive. That conclusion that recklessness was excluded flowed from that, not up from the rationale of the decision that we're trying to identify those offenders that are likely to use a gun in the future, which it seems to me is extremely vague.
But again, I would submit, with all due respect, that the court needs to focus on the words of Begay, typically purposeful, violent, or aggressive, roughly similar to the four offenses that are enumerated. It goes toward the issue of identifying those crimes which are going to be suggestive of future violent conduct. If Smith is a blanket ruling that recklessness can never be a crime of violence,
a mens rea of recklessness.
But then the Wisconsin statute of first-degree reckless injury caused by explosives could not be a crime of violence. Yet the statute itself says felonies involving the use of explosives. It necessarily, I would argue, must include recklessness, because the use of explosives are more likely than not, are typically going to result in injury or create a risk to a human being through the reckless use of the explosives. By the very words, crime for which the sentence can be more than a year, which involves the use of explosives, it necessarily must incorporate reckless conduct. And if that is true, then we are left with having to, on a case-by-case basis, unfortunately, it's hard for us too in the field, unfortunately have to identify what is a crime of violence based on, I would argue, whether or not that the particular crimes that the defendant has been convicted of are indicative of future violent acts.
I think your position also precludes the categorical approach. I think every single crime would have to be looked at to see how exactly every fleeing from a police officer would have to be looked at, every single crime. And that really is not how we have approached this in the past.
May I address that briefly?
Yes, go ahead.
I would only say that only to the extent that the charging document may have to be reviewed, which is clearly called for even under the categorical approach.
Not always.
But certainly, not always, I agree. But it may require that, perhaps. But certainly not the facts of the underlying offense. Thank you very much.
How much time?
Your Honors, in support of my suggestion that a clear rule of law is appropriate, and contrary to the government's position that case-by-case piecemeal litigation is appropriate, I think it's important for us to understand the present state of federal sentencing, to wit, Booker, and the fact that the guidelines are advisory. Several years ago, these fine distinctions were virtually dispositive as to what a court could and could not do at sentencing. Today, with the guidelines advisory, the application of the guidelines with their strict doctrine is advisory. So if, for instance, this court comes up with a clear, appropriate rule of law that crimes having the mens rea of recklessness are not 4B1.2 2 crimes of violence, and if down the pike came this hypothetical case in which an explosive had been used in connection with the offense of recklessness, Judge Stattmuller or any of the other district judges within this circuit are free to take those unusual circumstances into account in fashioning a sentence that is substantively reasonable pursuant to 18 U.S.C. Section 3553A. So what I'm suggesting, Your Honors, is that the bright line guideline rule gives district judges and this court clarity for that component of the sentencing process. To the extent that there are outliers that need to be dealt with, they can be dealt with via Section 3553A rather than by a piecemeal approach to guideline application. Absent questions, I would ask this court to vacate the sentence and remand it to Judge Stattmuller for further proceedings.
Thank you, Mr. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.